Well, hello and welcome to our radio show, Live from Ordinary Miracles. We usually start out by saying hello, Matt, and hello, Jan. But this is Jan Sircone here, solo tonight. Matt is busy at a convention in San Francisco. So I'll be interviewing one of my favorite people, Randy Masters, the artist in residence, lives in Aptos, California, and I'm sure we will have a lively, wonderful evening. Our show is about sound healing, and my website is musicforjoyandhealing.com. And for those of you that listen in every week, you know that I work with the voice. I work with a program called the Voice Bio that actually plots the frequencies of your body, and we can see where you're at health-wise and work to rebalance you through your voice and through sound. So this is usually the time I hand it over to Matt and we get a little male grounding, the yin-yang, so maybe I'll bring Randy in. Hi, Randy.
Hi, Jan. And hello, everybody out there in radio and computer land.
Radio computer. Yeah, it is interesting to think that most people are on their computer and tuning in and listening to us at the same time, multitasking. Uh-huh. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, I understand you're one of the most popular guests on Fred Bell's show.
Yeah, I've been on his show a number of times.
Uh-huh.
Always fascinating things we get into.
I can imagine.
You know, talking to a scientist, you know, and who has different kinds of background brings out different things in me than talking to a sound healer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious as to what you're going to bring out tonight.
The feminine, hey?
Yeah, the voice of the feminine. What is she going to bring out here?
Yeah. We have some inside jokes about that. Now, just tell us, well, let's just start right off here. One of your most recent projects with Fred Bell, tell us about that. It's very fascinating to me.
Well, I've been making unusual wind chimes and desktop chimes tuned to things like sacred geometry and colors and the rainbow, and I did a particular one based on the converting the 34 spectral lines of hydrogen from wavelengths of color into sound. And then he played that chime on the Art Bell show, and it seems like a lot of people were responding. And what's interesting is the fact that the hydrogen molecule is the fundamental molecule that all of the rest of creation references to. Everything comes out of hydrogen as sort of the, in terms of elements, is sort of the God mind in an element, you might say, the beginning particle. And so by listening to these hydrogen chimes, it seems to activate the hydrogen components in a person's body and in some way, or communicate to it, you know, activate,
well,
communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Develop
well,
some
Randy,
kind of resonance.
When you say hydrogen, though, explain to people, is that one note? Is it one chime? Is it like, to me, in my mind, I'm thinking H2O. Is it, is it
34
one
34 different notes. 34
that make up the hydrogen molecule.
Mm-hmm. The hydrogen atom, when you take the element of hydrogen and they do these spectral burns in a laboratory, it creates these 34 visible lines they call the Balmer, named after John Jacob Balmer, who discovered this in the late 1800s. And these are the visible lines of hydrogen that range from around 6,561 angstroms to 3,600 and something angstroms. So the first one is red, and it has a little orange in it, and it is exactly the second line of red that comes through the rainbow when the white light goes through a quartz prism. It divides into nine colors, and there's two reds and two greens. That's why there's nine instead of seven. And so this particular red line of hydrogen is the second red line of the rainbow. Then the next line of hydrogen is cyan blue, 486 nanometers. And that line is also in the rainbow. So two of the nine color frequencies that come through the quartz prism generated from white light in the rainbow spectrum are from hydrogen. Then there's one that's a blue-violet, so that's three. Then there's 31 additional lines that are all violet lines of hydrogen, which is interesting because, you know, the color violet speaks a lot and references very much to the angelic kingdom and to realms higher mm-hmm. than the physical, or let's say to spiritual topics as far as colors are concerned. You know, violet's almost always associated with purifying and spiritual topics. So 31 out of 34 of these hydrogen spectral lines are all colors of violet. So I think that there's something going on with that.
I'm feeling like I want to hear that. Do you have one at your house that you can run and get them?
No, I've sold every single one I have. Yeah, including my own.
So describe what that looks like. Does it sit on a desktop? Is it?
Well, it's very long. It's about 4 mm-hmm. feet long, and there's 34, you know, anywhere from half inch to 5/8 inch aluminum solid dowels that hang
uh-huh.
down. You play them with wooden mallets. And so mm-hmm. then as you play this, the notes are so close together. On one level, you think that it's the same note after a point, but they're gradually increasing.
It goes up so gradually. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it creates an amazing sound. And when you descend on it, it makes it sound like whales. And almost everybody that hears it, of all the chimes I've made, just stop in their tracks and say, what is going on? Something just happened. And they want to play around with it for a while because there's some type of interesting phenomena that they experience. So I want to explore that
mm-hmm.
further and find out, you know, what can be done to help humans and animals mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. such by playing the sounds of hydrogen. I mean, they're used to it in terms of light. And then eventually we'll play the lights, and I'm working on that on some projects. So we'll play the lights and the sound together. And so that should be very interesting.
It seems like it would go right to the core of things because our bodies are so... you know, much hydrogen. And then when you talked about the violet in it, that in other words, it's working with our body, our physical body, and with our spiritual nature.
Yeah,
and
Ibrahim Karim's work with biogeometry, the violet light is the realm that summons the angelic and the spiritual kingdom
mm.
in his work with the pyramids and studies of that he's mm-hmm. discovered. So and there's a lot of violet light healing devices. I mean, there's the violet light meditations that people do connected with Saint Germain
mm-hmm.
and others out of the Great White Brotherhood that they use for purifying and meditations. And then there's some violet light devices that researchers have had since at least in the 1800s that quite a lot of healing work was done with violet light. And so I did a lot of study.
How can people hear this? On your website, which let's say that real slow, universalsong.net. universalsong.net. I know that you actually have a little video that people can, you know,
and I'm
press
playing
on.
It on that, and we have to make sure some people saw it recently, and the video wasn't playing, so I have to find out, you know, in webland what the glitch is there and get that fixed. But
they
I have a little movie.
Hear it? Could mm-hmm. they hear that one, that specific
mm-hmm.
one?
Yeah.
So that would be cool. Well, to our listeners, I've just mentioned that when Randy and I were speaking earlier tonight, we both are very active in the sound healing field. We are both instructors at the Psychoacoustics Institute and speak at conferences and do private appointments. And Randy has an extensive background. How many years in sound healing, Randy?
I know, probably forever, because I don't think I've ever not been in that field, even when I didn't know what it was. I think it's always been there.
Mm-hmm. Because you were a musician first. And then
yeah.
the numbers came, and then the sacred geometry. I see the progression.
Right.
And then into the combination of how they all create the healing. Mm-hmm.
And I think like with a lot of societies around the world, ancient and in different musical cultures, they probably don't separate sound healing from sound because it's all integrated into their life. They have sounds for everything. They sing with all phases of their work, their life cycles, the different passages in life. And sound is right there supporting them in one way or another with rhythms and melodies and
mm-hmm.
chants. And, you know, harmony takes a background, although it's an important part of music. It takes at least third place after rhythm and melody, which hold the first
mm-hmm.
two places together, depending on its uses. So drums and chanting and melodies with rhythm are primary, and then through overtones you get into harmony, then later you bring chords into the picture. But in all the ancient societies, you know, it's the timbre of their musical instruments,
mm-hmm.
the rhythms, the pitches, the particular phonetic sounds of different languages associated with it that activate aspects of consciousness and healing and so on. And I think there's tremendous wisdom that we're going to need in our future for how life is progressing in this sector of the galaxy. We're going to need the assistance of conscious sound by people who know what they're doing.
That's
and
exactly,
even people who don't know what they're doing, who at least bring through truth.
Well, what I see your gift is, and those of the listeners who have heard you speak before, is that you're able to correlate all these different fields and weave it together in a magical way so that we do understand the underlying vibrational matrix of the earth and all the beings and above, and the striving for that natural cohesive balance that we have difficult with. So as Randy and I again discussed today how we could best serve this hour, we said we could talk about sound healing tools, methods, practical ways for people to use sound in their lives to become not only more healthy in a physical sense, but for what's up for all of us is learning how to use frequencies for our ascension processes. And in fact, that's what the whole acceleration in our frequencies is about, as we're going through these bands, frequency bands of ascension, and how we can use the sound to move us through and also to support and heal us, you know, through some of the unpeelings that aren't quite so comfortable. So this might be a good starting off place for Randy, you just to talk about some of the tools that you've developed and you use, which are so really many of them to specific frequencies and specific uses that are quite unusual and highly developed and sophisticated. So you choose where you'd like to jump off into this topic.
Well, I think the first thing is for everybody to be able to connect with sound and not have to view themselves as a musician. I think that would create tremendous limitations and problems of exclusion for people, because I believe the nature of sound is the very heart and nature of what we're made out of. And therefore, it's available to all creatures. You know, I mean, does a bird consider itself a musician, or crickets because of the way they sing? You know, that's their nature. That's what they do. Birds sing, and because of the way they sing, plants have different processes that get turned on by the bird sounds. Early in the morning when the birds sing, it initiates different processes through sound in the plants. And that's absolutely vital for life. So
now,
we look around.
Are the bees
first
a part of that as well? Are the bees, is that a
yes, absolutely.
The
sounds
yes.
that they make are important. And there's creatures who make sounds that we don't hear because they're below our range or above our range also. Just like there are colors that insects see in the far infrared range that we don't see. So I think we have to extend the spectrum besides the spectrum of human perception. But within the spectrum of human perception, all of the sounds in nature are compatible to holding the field, maintaining the field, nurturing the field. I'm talking the field meaning the whole life, universal life field that's supported by certain sounds. And as human beings with various, especially mechanical and electronic devices have encroached in the reality with their devices, they started creating disturbance patterns in nature. They disturb the insects, they disturb the plants, they disturb the animals, the birds, with harsh sounds and sounds that don't shape-shift and are not responsive to the rest of creation. They do one thing, they're mechanical, and they generally create disturbance patterns. Pardon me?
How about the human effect as well, the immune system degradation of the EMF?
Absolutely. From, you know, incoherent electricity to, you know, power lines to cell phones to cell phone towers, all of these things are all creating huge distortions and problems in the field.
That's a very good question, Randy. What do you recommend for people for protection from these fields? What tools do you use for that?
Beliefs, their beliefs in a person's individual belief system and individual beliefs within that, their organization of beliefs.
Creating intention for protection, like a
and believing that they can.
Invoking protection, right?
Mm-hmm. Then there's conditioning that people have, whether they know it or not. Basically, it's where their consciousness is. So although there are mechanical devices that many companies claim do things, most I've not been convinced, and I've seen a huge amount of them, been able to review them with both designers and scientists and look at things. And most of them are entropic attempts to solve an entropic situation, which is something that's breaking down. And a lot of times the solutions are maybe looking like they solve one aspect of the problem, but then maybe the problem has gone to another area that we don't know about. And there, it doesn't look like there's a problem, but there may be a problem in another area that later on comes and creates a problem for ourselves and others. So when all is said and done with all of that, and it's not to discourage the use of these devices within a certain spectrum of it, maybe they at least lessen some of the impact on us. But the main thing we have is our consciousness. There's people who've been exposed to everything from poisons, snakes, and bites, to radioactivity, many different things where they should have been killed or fried on some level. And they not only survived, they survived with no residue at all.
Sometimes I
How
think
did that
it's
happen?
Living in a certain frequency band. In other words...
Right, that's the frequency band of their consciousness.
It thinks of the denser reality and the mass consciousness in the belief systems that they just don't buy into that, and that their being, all the levels of their beingness, the mental, physical, spiritual, or vibrating higher, so those realities cannot interject themselves into their, it's like a band.
Yeah, they're in another area. They have a different kind of immune system, which is an immune system governed by where their beliefs and their attitudes, where their emotional pH is, where their view of life, the kind of light that they continue to emanate in the face of adversity is pretty much the test of their enlightenment.
And keeping their blood alkaline. We know that from our good friend Mohsen, that that's a very important part in staying in that higher frequency band out of the disease zone.
Yes.
To keep the viruses and bacteria away.
Well, there's a lot in that realm, and many 180s in that whole discussion of how that part works. But apart from going into that aspect where you could see something in under a microscope, at least live when you're looking at it, the main thing is our consciousness. That's really all we have to deal with any of it. And so
that's number one. That's it looks like you're putting that at the top of the list. That's the number one sound healing tool, intention in our consciousness. That's perfect.
Yeah. So that's, therefore, you know, it requires no musical training.
And that everyone should know that they have access to this, the frequencies and vibrations without. That's really important because so many people come to me for vocal work and say, I don't want to sing. In fact, I would say toning groups and no one would come. I'd say a sound journey and people would come. And we would do toning because of their perception that, you know, they would be singing and have to actually perform.
Well, a lot of people are perhaps turned off to certain uses of the voice that sound drony or meditative or sound Eastern if they're not of an Eastern affinity in their beliefs and their religious background or other things of that kind. They don't really understand what can occur through minimal melodic pitch and using certain syllables and the harmonics that come off those syllables, overtones and undertones, how they use their voice, what range they're chanting in, and, you know, and to take it for a time out of a religious context and see it as a sound field that they're working with. It does not have to be put into a context of certain belief systems.
Right, a context. To me, it is the most perfect vehicle for healing. And for raising the frequencies, we each have a voice. And just by humming, now this is one of my questions for you tonight, my list. I always tell people, hum, bring those vibrations into your body. If people wanted to do simple, either syllables or specific intervals, what would you recommend for their own sound healing process that's simple and that we could, you know, teach them even right now?
Well, if they get out of their heads and just let themselves hum and not, you know, again, depends on what kind of training they've had. There is a one path is involves training and learning the names of the intervals and how to sing them and how to sing them perfectly in tune regarding the mathematics of the acoustics behind it and how to know when they're sharp or flat or somewhere in between, you know. There's
that
whole thing.
That's hard for most people.
Yeah, so there's another realm.
Yeah.
And my first example was somebody who told me about just saying hum like, when you're just about to eat something. And a lot of people do that.
Okay.
They go, good. Doing that sound contributes to raising the life force of the food and creating a harmony between the person ingesting the food and the food, and it forms a sound bridge that allows for different things to happen within the digestion and within the assimilation. It's actually a very profound, and we think of this as something that maybe we did as kids, and adults do it from, you know, from time to time. They go, boy, that was good. You know, that part is actually part of the sound healing when they really feel it.
Well, we know the commercial. Good.
Exactly.
Yeah,
especially the ones in the 50s and 60s.
Our psychological.
There was a lot of endearing, innocent clues that were given in that era before things began to be too structured.
It's also the as above, so below. It's the mother's milk, Michael. There's many wonderful things about that sound.
So the making those innocent type of sounds and looking at what kids do who have not been deprogrammed from natural responses to reality. And adults can copy a lot of things that kids do and derive benefit from sound. I mean, children make all kinds of different interesting sounds. One, there's, of course, the time in their life when their voices are undeveloped and there's certain limit in range. There's a point when boys and girls' voices are all in the same range before the voice changes. But basically, there's a lot of very natural healing things that children do that would be equivalent to like what cats do when cats purr or other animals and things. And they, in other words, they have not been programmed out of these natural responses. And I think we need to pay attention to those because chances are the children have been holding the field of a lot of magic that can help that helps the children and helps other children and can help adults if adults don't think, well, this is too childish or too childlike for me to do. And then the adults get into their heads and all of a sudden lose touch with what's natural.
Absolutely.
And lose touch with the magical child. And when magical kids sing, they make up all kinds of different things. And I think there's a tremendous amount of sound, you might say sound healing, balancing, harmonizing that goes on. We don't have to use the word healing.
So,
we could consider that harmonizing might be appropriate at times.
But following this train of thought, if you were near a children's playground, just hearing their free voices and bubbly laughter, those are natural sounds. In sound, natural soundscapes are healing, so that would be healing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
To be around children.
And the way they laugh without being conditioned in their laughter. You know, you hear a lot of adults laugh, you can study their laughter, and you can see this or notice the psychological conditioning that shapes the kind of laughter that they have. Because they're wanting to heal themselves with their laughter, but they're not aware of it, so it, things come out that are very telling of unfinished business and issues and such. I mean, that's not, I'm not saying this to have anyone feel self-conscious, because actually, you know, the more people can laugh and not be self-conscious, and the natural laughter, if they could let that out, would know in its intelligence how to help the person heal something. But if they get into their head about it, they can alter the laughter, and then they run the laughter through the conditioning in a certain way, instead of letting the laughter resolve the conditioning.
Would you say laughter has a musical component then?
It does for some people.
If it's if it is expressing that person in the moment, actually, it would be a signature of their bodily vibrations. I should do a voice bio for someone before laughter and after laughter. The highest reading for vibrancy in their body reading was a couple in their 80s, and they were sky high, this little Annie and her husband at the Sound Healing Convention. I ran them, and it was astounding. And they both do laughter therapy for seniors.
So even to be in that as a prime focus, you know, they're tuned in. And I'm sure
to be near them.
Yeah, yeah, they live their life because of the brain waves that it changes, the heart rate variability, respiration, the way laughter you can't hold on to certain kind of thoughts when you let go and laugh, and it just snaps you out of being plugged into issues and plugged into conditioning. It short circuits that for a moment. You know, I think it's extraordinary, something to study more and look at, you know, the melodies in laughter, for instance, and the different mm-hmm. types of laughter. And but not to study it so much that all of a sudden now people are going out trying to learn certain ways to laugh, and uh-huh. they're not natural. I mean, yeah. I know mm-hmm. laughing different ways can produce different effects, but the last thing you'd want somebody to do is not allow in that process for mm-hmm. whatever the natural laughter from them to move their whole body. You know, and so it's very precious.
Well,
part.
It's endorphins, right? Tom
yeah.
Kenyon and the Hather say it's all about joy and bliss. And just think of all the emotions that get crunched up and dissolved with deep laughter. It's no accident that Yoga Laughter is a new program sweeping the country. And on January 9th, that is our guest, Carmela Carlisle, who is the laughter mistress here in Sonoma County, will be our guest. And she actually came, and down in my little healing circle, took a group of women through laughter yoga, and she had us practically peeing our pants. It was so just hilarious, simple exercises, and something drops out deeply in your lower
mm-hmm.
chakras. It just totally releases, and then we were laughing at our laughing.
And higher chakras, because a lot of the enlightened beings laugh. I heard a story, though, that this is a 180 mm-hmm. one, but I think it's important to keep track of 180s, mm-hmm. things that are completely the opposite. And they said that Yeshua or Jesus didn't laugh. He had a great sense of humor, but he didn't laugh because he didn't have any issues to resolve. And I thought, well, that statement I thought was very interesting.
That's fascinating.
I don't know if it's true, but thinking mm-hmm. about it, and who noted that? I mean, where did they write that in some parchments? That said that, you know, they were around him, and although he had a great sense of humor, that he didn't laugh. But the idea that a being could be free of certain issues and then wouldn't mm-hmm. need laughter to release those issues, but yet still had a sense of humor, which to me, all great enlightened beings must have a sense of humor.
Well, you'd have to look at the Dalai Lama. He seems to me to have a continued state of pleasantry in his facial
mm-hmm.
expression.
Yeah.
But yet, I don't think I've ever seen him really crack up. They say that the muscles of your face have to work a lot harder when you're frowning as well. Well, let's move on the sound tool. So here we have number one, our consciousness. Number two, laughter for sound healing. Number three, you have so many products. You have tuning forks. You have the chimes. You have sacred geometry tools, all related to sound. Which would you like? Or piano tunings. I know you've tuned your own piano into special scales so that it blossoms the overnight.
Well, that's something
that feeling.
I'm wanting to encourage more musicians to work with. That's a bit difficult because of the conveniences that modern tuning is dealing with and manufacturing problems with different manufacturers that don't allow you to play sharper or flatter on some instruments. Like if you have a set of marimbas or vibraphones, you know, you don't tune them. You know, they're already tuned. It's very challenging to mess with the tuning. You have to buy a new set of keys or bars to tune them, for instance. And guitars, the frets are in a certain place, and you have to have guitars made with frets in altered places. I have a friend who makes fretboards for guitars that you buy a set of maybe five or six of them, and they snap off magnetically. And the frets are in different places so that you get different intervals. But, you know, out of, you know, 1,000, 10,000 guitar players, you might find two that have anything like that, maybe. So there's a lot of educating that needs to be done, and I'm working on that with musicians and excellent musicians. And I want to work with a lot of well-known musicians and suggest to them and coach them how to move in another direction that will bring sacred tunings into their creativity, into their music, when appropriate, given, you know, specific kinds of music that they might want to do. These are avenues that many of them don't explore. Now, brass instruments, singers, when working a cappella, at least, woodwind instruments and string players all learn different tuning systems that are not based on equal temper tuning that's been dominated by where the frets are on guitars and where how pianos are typically tuned.
Well, what's the benefit, Randy, for people to do these tunings? What can they expect?
You get to hear pure intervals that are found in the natural overtone series
versus
a mathematical oddity that comes out of a cerebral level of consciousness that is not found in nature. And I'm not saying that those cerebral mental aspects of music don't have their value, because they do have a value, and they can be put to great use. There's been
so it will help balance their body, right?
So, yeah, they'll begin to hear natural intervals, and you'll find more people have a better pitch than they thought they had. People who don't have good relative pitch or perfect pitch can develop it by listening to natural intervals, because they do not get that development properly with equal temper tuning. Now, I have a lot of the musicians I work with, I have to deal with their attitudes about tunings, their lack of knowledge there, and many, their resistance to even being willing to investigate these areas, because there are very, very simple things that can be done. So it's going to take some educating. So I'm making tools, both the tuning forks, the wind chimes that have certain tunings, and there's many wind chime companies that have interesting tunings that are not equal-tempered wind chimes in some Asian scale, that actually have Asian tunings for Asian scales based on whole number ratios. That's very important. Otherwise, they're not going to hear the purity of what that's really all about, and the beauty and the simplicity and the elegance of it. And it opens doors.
What do you think about the new tuning programs, computerized, that they're using? Like some of these young fellows, could they use those programs? You just download them and it shows you all the ancient tunings, and you actually can tune your instrument and it'll show you if it's sharp or flat?
Yeah, they can do that with synthesizers in the computer and not even know the math, but just hit a button and have it retune and listen to it. As long as they listen and pay attention and train their ears and don't go on autopilot and become robotic with it. Not that good music couldn't be created like that, but the point is if people listen to what they're doing, and not all musicians listen well enough to what they play or what other people play, and that's a problem, nor do non-musicians. You know, music functions different ways without people giving it the full attention, but when you really pay attention, you can let the music train your consciousness and advance your consciousness. That's why music study has been so important in all the ancient societies. And one of the reasons it's taken out of the public schools now, because one of the first things to go are the music programs. And when that goes, the intellect goes down. People become a lot more dumbed down. They don't relate as well. Same thing happened in a lot of the monasteries. When they got rid of their music programs, the monasteries fell apart. Music held their whole field together. In a lot of monasteries, they'll sing 4 to 6 hours a day. And not for entertainment, just to put themselves in certain states of consciousness. And then they go about their other studies and their work, and they let the sound field take them to a certain place with their brain, their mind, their heart, their consciousness. Then they apply that consciousness to greater ends than would be applied if they didn't do music. So I'm a great advocate of getting the music back in the school systems. And that's a big healing. I mean, I taught music since about 1967.
You've worked with a lot of young people.
Yeah, and I've watched music be taken out of the schools till eventually, when I taught in college, the people coming in to study didn't even have a junior high background in music.
Oh, you lost the, you know.
They've lost many generations. Not that people can't catch up, and some do, but it's been devastating on the interconnections that people have when they had really good music programs. And so part of music healing is to get music integrated into people's lives as something natural, not this extracurricular activity that's judged that when all the necessities are done, maybe you'll have time to do some music, you know, and it's looked at as a hobby, and that's a really big problem in the consciousness field. And that must shift.
Well, I think for both of us, part of our program is to bring integrate music naturally into our lives every day. And people are asking me every day about tuning forks. They're saying, now, how would I use these? What types of sets? And I know that you are, you have worked with tuning forks many years and that you've developed some specific sets for specific things, like the Kabbalah for spiritual attunements, the rainbow set for color in balancing the body and working with the chakras. Then you have
acupuncture practitioners. I train them in how to use them along with needles or instead of. They can do foot reflexology, can be done completely with tuning forks. I developed for the whole U.S. National Foot Reflexology, I developed the whole tuning fork program. So your person is being worked on completely on their feet with tuning forks.
And then you have your Pythagorean set, which is perfect for tuning up the spine, goes with the lumbar correlations, and I use that actually for my lyre, my natural acoustical instrument to tune that up.
So there's an infinite number of individual forks and tuning fork sets based on ancient scales, based on different effects, resonances with organs, tuning forks tuned to different minerals, tuned to different colors, tuned to the proportions and geometry. I have, you know, like hundreds of different sets that I make available potentially. I mean, they're not all on the website because it's too much for most people, but within my consulting with people, things that I make available, because with the tuning fork, especially made out of the right kinds of alloys and metals and such, you have an acoustic musical instrument that frees you up from electricity, and it breathes. It changes with the bit with the temperature. You can take it pretty much anywhere. You can sound it outdoors, indoors. You can sing along with it. You can put it on your body. You can move it around your body. You can tune musical instruments with it by sounding the tuning fork and then matching the pitch. You can meditate with it. You can just strike them against each other and listen to the intervals and begin to train your nervous system to respond differently to sound and train your consciousness. So there's an extraordinary adaptable and a simple tool that people can carry around. I used to have little sets that I carry in my pocket, and I could go walking in nature, and I could pull out different tuning forks and play with them, and I'd notice the birds had come around, and sometimes different animals would come around, and they were very curious, and they liked it. And I have vets, for instance, that are using tuning forks and doing work on animals, and the animals love the tuning forks.
Well, speaking of curious, I know many people are wondering, you know, how to use them, how to hold them, and we are going to have lots of them down at the Globe Sound Healing Conference, and Randy and I will be there. We'll be having booths, and we're both speaking there. That's January 26th and 28th, and David Gibson is putting that together, of the Psychoacoustics in San Francisco, and let me give a contact number for that, 800-9000-MIX, and you can go online at www.soundhealingcenter.com. Randy will be speaking on the Symphony of the Spheres, Dr. Jeffrey Thompson, Scientific Sound Healing, David Gibson, Dr. Fred Bell, Don Campbell, Gary Schwartz, Don Estes, oh, he's one of my favorites, Lisa Raffel, and Sylvina Vergara. And actually, Randy, you are going to be helping pull together a little concert for that conference as well.
And we have some different, you know, sound combinations. And you don't always have to put healing there. You know, it's because, you know, helping consciousness to grow and helping people connect with the greater spirit and to connect with the heart of creation, to connect with nature. I mean, in a way, that's a primary healing that's needed for healing our planet. So it doesn't mean that somebody has to be sick or have a physical problem. A healing of consciousness, healing of attitude, healing of beliefs, healing of their relationship to the rest of creation and honoring creation, to me, is part of the big picture of what healing really is about.
So you also see clients privately as well, and you do consulting. What, give us a little bit more breadth of how your what your world looks like as a expert in sound healing.
Well, we'll teach a class, and then there'll be sound experiences available in the class, as well as information, the combination of experiences and information together. produces certain effects and helps people. Then, you know, when I do individual consulting, depends on the projects that people are working on, whether they're working on something, the sounds in nature and analyzing them, or they're wanting to compose music of a different type, or they're interested in the ancient world, or they're interested in the music of planets and stars. And so I look at what that is and then bring my background in math and geometry and sound and acoustics and composition and world music studies, all of that information and spiritual studies together to see what would serve that person as the next step that they could take to forward something that they feel in their soul is on their path to do, or something mm-hmm. they were born to do, or something they have a great passion or a desire to accomplish or work with, or just plain explore because of some kind of curiosity. And then that gets down to specifics such as working with somebody who does acupuncture, or somebody who's working with the bones, or like the vets who are working with animals. And so I have things like tissue rejuvenation frequencies that are used with animals, the Paul Nogier tissue frequencies, and I have some amendments to those frequencies that I've discovered. And all the people that I get those to are getting great results with the animals, as an example. And mm-hmm. I believe, you know, we have to have a healthy rapport with the animals and be good custodians. So it's not that the animals are a lower life form. We have to care for them. And the greater shape the animals are in, the better they help take care of the biosphere and such for us as well. So I believe that we have a great responsibility to assist the animals, especially because we have done things that have encroached on their territory and caused them great distress. So I think that humans can help with sound. It's a very good way to communicate back. So it really depends upon what the project is. I have someone working with color, a number of people working with color and sound. They have different color projects, or maybe they're dancers and they want sound, and they're looking for how do they do dance projects to certain geometric shapes, and what would the sounds be for that? Very creative things. And so I'll develop products for them, or maybe I already have products and I just have to match things that I've explored with the person who has the correct project. It's really exciting and completely varied. And then I also do individual work with people and show them how to tune themselves with tuning forks, and sometimes they just need to experience being tuned a number of times and track how sound moves through their body, through the different meridians, and then they become educated to the sound current, which is one of the greatest things we can do in the field of sound, is introduce people to learning how to listen and hear the different sounds, listen to their nervous system, listen to the buzzing in their ears and make sense of it as far as consciousness. And so the tuning forks are ways, and some of the sound tubes that I have, the 1-inch diameter, 2-inch diameter, or the desktop chimes, making these coherent sounds in and around the body impact the aura and send information into that person's field that they can then process and work with. And many times it clears blockages, both physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, or all four can occur in interacting with the sound.
When I use your black hole chime and the phi ratio, they're 2-inch wide and they're a few feet long, and I put people in the middle, they totally go into a trance. It's just remarkable. I'm using that in groups, and it's very, very amazing. Well, I have a question for you. You know, I have my newsletter, and the listeners that get it, and actually it's a free sound healing newsletter. All you have to do is go on my website, musicforjoyandhealing.com. I have a column on there called Ask Randy because, again, as you can hear, Randy, our guest tonight, knows how to tie all these together. So, Randy, I have a very fascinating question. I got an email today, and then this is going to be great because people are going to see on the spot how you pull this together. This is a riddle. What does this mean? My friend Journey emailed this to me, and she said that this is what some people use to go into a spiritual state, and this is what they say. 13, 20, 33, Merkaba, activate. Can you explain what that means?
Well, here's some interpretations that run with that. The 13 and 20 are numbers out of the Mayan calendar that relate to the mathematics of different timing codes and understanding cycles and harmonics, that in the Mayans were great mathematical masters. They had all kinds of different calendars that measured things from the smallest to the largest in the universe. And so the 1320 part relates to that. Now, if it were 13 and 21, those would be two next Fibonacci numbers that are next to each other that would create a golden mean Fibonacci ratio, like 1.61 something, close to 1.618 by 21 over 13, that ratio. But 20 is not one of those ones. So, I mean, that's clearly coming out of the Mayan codes. And they also, the 13 is relating to the 13 lunar months in that aspect of a calendar. Instead of dividing into 12, dividing into 13. So that's an important aspect. It also involves 12 around 1, like in the Christ principle of the activator with 12 around it. And we have 13 cell salts in the body, one that's an activator that's beryllium-lithium, and then another 12 cell salts that all spin in one direction. And the lithium-beryllium one catalyzes all the other 12. So there's another model, you know, in biochemic cell salts, for instance, for the 13. There's many different things that go along with that 13. And then the 33 is a master number. If it were 34, it would be another Fibonacci number. So three Fibonacci numbers in a row would be 13, 21, 34. So there's, you know, this is close to that. But again, there's only one Fibonacci number out of this. 33 is a master number that relates to many things in sacred geometry and angles of
that
tilt.
Christ consciousness.
The double master numbers are all associated with that. They're all built on the number 11. All nine double numbers, 11 through 99, are all based on an overtone series 1 through 9 of the number 11. And the number 11 represents a gateway. And therefore, they represent two pillars. It represents, on another level, humanity standing with God in harmony with the Creator. However you consider
God. You have a tuning
God.
Fork set made out of that, too, don't you?
Yeah, I have one particular one has 24 tuning forks. And it's all the numbers, harmonics are based on 11, but it's all the overtones, 24 through 48. And when I got done creating that set, all of the numbers in that set are typical numbers that show up in crop circle measurements in terms of feet and inches and such, especially ones, you know, there's a lot of things in the world grid that relate to the number 11, like 5,280 feet in the mile. That's an ancient megalithic number. And the number 528 is an octave of 33. And
well, Randy,
instance,
I think we could go on for another 3 hours.
You get an idea.
Here.
In other words, I would just
stories,
go.
Yeah, within stories is fabulous.
You know, into each of the numbers and what their resonances are and, you know, things that they associate with. And by the time somebody gets into it, you know, I do a number on them in that way. You know, they're not.
you certainly do.
They're not necessarily and hopefully not in their left brain about it. They are beginning to realize that numbers represent qualities, not just quantities, and that is the big, important distinction in understanding the unified field, is that numbers also communicate qualities. So I'd like the listeners to, you know, hang out with that idea for a while.
Well, before we sign off, I would like to announce that Randy will be leading a trip to Egypt, Journey of the Heart, Anchoring World Peace and Harmony, with Dr. Paul Hubbert, who we love Paul. He's a sound master and a wonderful leader. He's been to Egypt many times. He'll be in safe hands. Let me give you Paul's number if you'd like to go. That will be April 26th to May 7th with a 3-day Mount Sinai extension. That number is 512-891-7887. Briefly, let me announce that December 26th, our guest is Dennis McGregor, and January 9th, Carmela Carlisle with Laughter Yoga will be joining us. And Randy, did you have any finishing comments before we have Seth put on the CD that you actually were musical director of? And he'll be playing our Oot Kwayant that you so lovingly put together.
Well, let me mention that the previous piece was built on, I used my F major, on a C major scale starting on F, the F Lydian mode crystal bowls that I have, a perfectly tuned set, and I made chords that have three or four notes in them, and the chord progression in the background were all made from crystal bowls. And then it went through a cycle of force, which is a particular, the most popular chord progression for those chords from Baroque music times in the days of Bach. And so it was also put into a 7-bar cycle instead of 8. So it feels like every time you count even numbers, the chord progression starts one chord over in the cycle. So it feels like a spiral, and it's dedicated to the 7 visible stars in the Pleiades.
So that would be our opening song that we played.
The 7 Sisters.
Yeah, we call it the 7 Sisters, mm-hmm. and the CD is As Above, So Below, and you can get it on cdbaby.com.
And then Eric Bates is playing an improvised guitar solo over the top of that, and I feel very strong in including the guitar because it's such a voice of many generations. As a stringed instrument, it's very expressive. So I feel it's important for the electric guitar also to be used in sound healing because there's just I used to be a guitarist as well as piano and trumpet and bass and such, and you know I have a great love for the guitar. So that's part of what that piece was about, to show several of these different correspondences and work the guitar in with your voice and the crystal bowls and play along with this unusual tuning for the guitar that normally plays an equal temper tuning, but to play along with this whole number overtone tuning.
That's now, a great idea to make that combination. Randy, we're going to sign off now. I can't believe it. I know we could continue talking, and I know the listeners have loved being in your world, living a little bit into your world tonight. So thank you for being my guest here on Live from Ordinary Miracles. And we're going to have sign out with the Utkoyant that you created for the CD as well. Thank you, Randy.
Thank you, Jan. Thank you, listeners, for joining us and sharing with
us. Yes. Thank you. All right, Seth.
Radio. 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 Rad